questions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Hello, I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
Each week, Heidi and I welcome you to Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and conversation with those who suffer the loss of a loved one and for healthcare professionals who work in this most difficult field. As always, the message is, others have been there before you and made it. You can too. You need not walk alone. If you're listening to our Thursday live internet show, please join Heidi and me by calling the show. Our toll-free number is 1-866-472-5792. These shows are archived on our blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the CompassionateFriends.org website, and they are brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation. Well, Heidi, I wanted to remind people that these shows can be downloaded on iTunes because I am just finding more and more people who are doing that.
Absolutely. And then when you're out walking or in your car, you can listen to the shows. And that's a lot of times when people have the time to do that.
Absolutely. Well, Heidi, we are coming up on the holidays, and we have our webmaster is always kind of ahead of us. We were talking to him about, Chris, about letting people know that we're looking for any articles, poetry, or whatever that you might have, memories that you would like to share with us for our Foundation and Grief Blog website this year. And I just was looking on my in my email, Heidi, right before the show, and Chris said that he has put up on thegriefblog.com a hit so you can, it says, share your memories and survival strategies.
I like that.
Go to that, and then it says poems, memory, story, and you can put those on the site for us, and we'll put them, our executive editor, Neil Chethick, will take those and put them on the site during the holidays, you know, whether it's Thanksgiving, Christmas, Hanukkah.
Halloween.
Isn't that, you don't think of what an important holiday, Halloween, or tough holiday is for people who've lost kids.
Well, exactly. And you know, I think it's really hard because you are out, you know, either you're home and people are ringing your doorbell or you're out in the street and seeing kids, and kids have costumes on, so you can't see what they look like. And so that is such a flooding memory of your own children and what they look like on Halloween and the experience of trick-or-treating with them and answering the door with them and all these positive experiences you had when they were still alive. And
oh, by the way, Heidi, and your sibling, right?
Exactly. And your sibling who you went trick-or-treating with every year for, you know, 15 years and ran around with in their costumes, and it just brings back all those years of memories you've had.
Yeah, it's kind of I think it's the one that can sneak up on you because you don't think of it as being this major holiday.
Well, and I also think people think, okay, now what am I going to do this year? You know, if you have surviving children, then you need to be there for them, and they would want to go trick-or-treating, and then you're thinking, do I want to answer the door? Do I not want to answer the door? I mean, you know, all these kind of questions all of a sudden come up.
Absolutely. So something to think about. Well, Heidi, I wanted to talk a little bit about one of our articles. You were going to talk about it, the presence of his absence.
Right. It's called The Presence of His Absence is Everywhere. Yes, and it's on our grief blog. And like you were saying this morning, Mom, it's gotten a lot of response from many, many people. And basically, the article is really powerful. It talks about how when we have someone that's died, when we've lost someone, their presence is everywhere. It's in the music we hear. It's in the smells we have. It's in all of our memories. It's in what we taste. It's everywhere we look. We remember that person. Even when we don't want to remember them, we remember them all the time. And the authors even talk about how when they look at their surviving children, they think about what they've lost, that they'll never have a sibling again, and that this person is just such a part of their lives everywhere they are.
Now, who are our authors of that?
Diane and Louise.
And Louise, and that's the beautiful thing of the blog. Diane and Louise sent this in, and they are just getting a huge number of comments. So as my mother, Phyllis, used to say, everybody's got a story, so please blog in and give us yours because it's just such a gift to everyone, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it just, I mean, the response is so great that they've touched on the chord. People are really, really identifying with this and saying, okay, you get it, yes. We are living the same life that you are, and in certain ways that's comforting because then you know you're not alone.
So blog in with us and be part of our community. Well, Heidi, would you like to introduce our guest today? We've got three very interesting guests today, and now why don't you introduce our first one?
Sure, I'd be honored to. Our first guest today is Judy Wolf, and our topic is healing the soul. Judy is an ordained interfaith minister who lost her 16-year-old son, Joe, and then embarked on a quest to discover how one heals the heart and soul after this. She is the author of Spiritual Life Rafts, Women's Stories of Profound Loss, Courage, and Healing. Welcome to the show, Judy.
Thank you.
Hi, Judy. It's great to have you on the show. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about Joe and what happened with him.
Yeah. Joe is my oldest son. He was 13 at the time. He and five or six other boys were walking home from church one day, kind of throwing snowballs and were restless and running around a bit. And as they were walking home, just a few hundred feet, really, from the church, a neighbor stopped by on the opposite side of the road and offered the boys a ride home. A couple boys ran across, got in the car, and then my son threw one more snowball and turned, went to run and get in the car, and an oncoming car in the opposite lane hit him. He suffered a traumatic brain injury, a very severe traumatic brain injury, so much so that we fully anticipated as he was rescued from the pavement and life-flighted to the primary children's hospital here in Salt Lake City, that he might not live more than an hour or two. As he looked very, when we saw him on the pavement, he looked very, his eyes were fully dilated. He wasn't breathing. He was in seizure some of the time. So we fully anticipated we lost him completely that evening. But as it turned out, he lived on. He survived the accident, but he never really recovered. He never recovered in a meaningful way.
Well, your story is one of the books that I read, and one of the stories that I read in your book, Spiritual Life Rafts. And it's one of the stories I thought it was interesting. It's kind of at the back, but I wanted to just, before we get into some of the other stories, just hit on a couple of things that came up for me from reading your story, and one of them was, and I know our audience out there who've had brain injured children who've lived for a certain amount of time can resonate with your being in the hospital. I used to actually work on a surgical service, so I was. Been involved with families where there have been accidents and children who are comatose and then go into the vegetative state where they have to move them out of the hospital into a facility. I know how difficult it is to take those kids home because the intensity of care, and there are all sorts of insurance issues that I thought, well, our audience has all those because once you get them out of the hospital, you don't get the insurance anymore, right?
Right. And that's one of the dilemmas that parents go through is they want to bring them home. Their instincts are bring them home because it might actually help jog something or it might help spur them to a new stage of recovery. Yeah. But while you're in the hospital, if you have good insurance, you're pretty much covered for everything and you drop off a cliff when you bring them home. It's very
Yeah, that's what I would think. I'm listening to this, Judy, thinking how scary it must be to feel like, okay, now they're home and it's up to me to make sure that they stay alive and I'm not in the hospital. But like you said, on the other hand, putting them in a comfortable environment that they know might be healing.
Right, and we do get, I mean, the nurses used to tell me they used to get things they called the weekend recovery where a family takes a child home even just for a day because you can't check them out or they lose their inpatient status, but they'll bring them home for a day.
I didn't know that.
And something will start to happen at home that they didn't see happening in the hospital. So, I mean, you listen to these stories, of course, with great intensity, great hope that your child, too, will
And that's one of the things you said in your piece is that the miracle story was irritating,
More than
especially
irritating.
With a coma.
More than irritating.
Yeah. And I understand people's need to tell it. If I were on the other side of that, you probably could not shut me up if we had had a recovery.
Right.
Well, I understand that.
But there, and then as you said, the you're on a unit with other children, and the parents come to take them home, and there are balloons, and everybody's happy.
Right.
And when you take Joe. He went to a step-down facility unit for 3 months, I believe, before you...
13 months.
Oh, 13. Actually,
yeah, he was in the hospital 16 months altogether, so he really did have the benefit of the very best,
right.
Care, medicine, care, therapy, drugs, a neurologist, an attending neurologist. We gave him everything in the hopes that some little piece might come back.
Right, and then you took him, and he did smile, which is another heartbreaker.
They
smile, and then you think maybe they're going to move on from there.
Well, and he would smile, because the doctors even, I asked several of them, why is he smiling if he's in a vegetative state?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, they do that reflexively. And
mm-hmm.
I said, well, no, I want you to watch next time, especially his dad comes in to the hospital, mm-hmm. and he leans over and says something kind of smart-alecky or brings out toilet humor or something,
mm-hmm.
and Joe will sometimes chuckle even and laugh, and eats very responsively, and so it was confusing, and they said, we don't know why sometimes that happens.
That's interesting.
So it's a very, you get these little kind of, we now know they're false alarms, but you get this little part of you that says, oh, we've been so patient and we've been so good, now we're about to see our Joe come back, and he'll chuckle or laugh out loud and then nothing.
And then you hear these stories, as you know all too well, of people, like on the internet, or whatever, people that years later all of a sudden come out of these things suddenly.
Well, yeah,
no explanation.
Those are extremely painful for parents like us who
mm-hmm.
fought the good fight and did everything we could, and then our children die, and then we hear, in the news, like you do, that
mm-hmm.
one out of about 10,000 of people come back and say a few words. Sometimes that's it. They go back into their vegetative state or coma after saying a few words. Sometimes they don't ever really get up and resume, that I know of, a so-called normal life. I've
right.
been out of it for years.
So you had Joe home for 2 years and took care of him, was that right?
Right.
And he was quite large by then, wasn't
he? Yeah, he got big. He was almost 6 feet tall and 185
wow.
pounds.
That is wow. incredible to try to take care of that young man. Well, we're coming up on break now. When we get back from break, I want to move on a little bit and talk to Judy about how she survived after Joe's death, and about becoming a minister and some of the things that she's done. And she's got some wonderful lessons learned, 7 lessons that we're going to hit on that are really very special. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. You can download these shows on iTunes. Visit us on thegriefblog.com as well as the Open to Hope Foundation website. All these shows are archived on those sites and can be downloaded on iTunes. Please stay tuned for more.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Just a reminder to our listeners that you can own 10 of the very best Healing the Grieving Heart shows, available on CD. Our listeners tell us that they have used these shows to examine the many viewpoints of grief and to stimulate conversation on this difficult subject. Call toll-free 877-969-0010, that's 877-969-0010, to order a set, or visit the CompassionateFriends.org website and click on TCF Originals for the opportunity to purchase this specially priced set at only $60 for 10 CDs plus shipping and handling. Heidi and I have donated all the proceeds to the Compassionate Friends to help bereaved families following the death of a child.
Who are we? What really matters? Is it possible to find true happiness after a great loss? The answers to some of life's most important questions are explored in Space Between Breaths, a powerful, uplifting film which looks at the potential in grief and to the ways it can become a motivational, transformational force in our lives. Featuring conversations with parents who have lost a child, including those whose loved ones died at Columbine on September 11th, and a mother whose son was one of the first U.S. soldiers to die in Iraq. Space Between Breaths offers an inspired and healing perspective on loss, which will transform the way you live and love. For information on ordering the film, visit the website www.spacebetweenbreaths.com.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us, we're talking today about healing the soul with Judy Wolf, author of Spiritual Life Rafts, Women's Stories of Profound Loss, Courage, and Healing. Welcome back to the show, Judy and Gloria.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, Judy, when we went to break, we were talking about Joe's accident and how he went into a coma and then a vegetative state, and you took him home, and he lived 3 years after his accident?
Yeah, a little over. It was over 3 years.
And he was a big guy by then. I mean, that's incredible to think about his growth and
yeah, for some reason, I think of somebody that's in a coma that they don't grow, but they do grow.
Yes, all the same physical changes that from a 13-year-old boy to an almost 17-year-old young man.
That's incredible to think about that, and all while their body still does its thing.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about the fact that you lost him twice.
Mm-hmm. Well, I often refer to it as the long goodbye, which had two distinct parts to it. When he was hit, you know, and he survived. And for several 2 years after that, we had, of course, the hope. It was a fading hope, as there was no evidence of recovery. But there was a hope, nonetheless, that some part of him would return. And no part of him returned except the little smile and chuckle and a sense that he was still him in there somewhere. But it was more just a sense. So we had to get... We had to say goodbye while he was still alive, if that makes sense. We would look
mm-hmm.
at him.
To the boy you had thought you had, yes.
Right. We had to say goodbye to that
boy
and leave it in the past, because if you looked at him always through the eyes of who he used to be, you would be in a permanent stage of mourning.
Mm-hmm.
My husband used to call it, he said, I feel like I'm at a permanent viewing in my own home, because Joe would be, you know, in the bed, not
mm-hmm.
moving, and it kind of looks that way that...
So you gave him that goodbye, and then after he died, you had to give him that final goodbye. Talk about that a little bit, after, because I know a lot of our families have been taking care of kids for years and had that loss, or had cancer or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just also, I mean, it might be like taking care of an aging parent. I don't know, because I haven't done that.
Yeah, directly, it reminds me a little bit of my mother-in-law who has Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Well, we had to say goodbye to the woman that I knew, that I once knew.
Right, because you can't really be present with somebody and be attentive to who are you right now today mm-hmm. if you're always dwelling in who you used to be.
I wanted you to talk about that final goodbye. Is there a guilt involved, or a wondering, or a why, or I don't know, how is that?
Well, I think for
that?
Us it was, I mean, if I were to be very frank, it was relief.
Mm-hmm.
Because I saw what his life would look like had he remained alive in here. And what it would look like is I would get to the point of exhaustion and my family would be exhausted with this whole 24-hour care situation. And he would move to a care center, hopefully the best one I could find, but, you know, they're not, none of us, I think, would choose, if we could, to move into any of these.
Right.
There are not a lot of them available for kids either. It's not like nursing homes.
So you felt a bit of sense of relief when he did die, but then there is people tell me that there is that loss because you've had that activity. You
right.
almost have to reorganize your life.
It's very shocking to after the funeral and everybody goes home and then it's Monday morning and you look at that empty bed and all of the medical supplies and the wheelchair and everything else, and you just say, well, now who am I? Who am I, and what do I do for a living?
Right. Mm-hmm. And you, by the way, had become a minister, and I liked what you said in the book that you really did it to take care of yourself while he was living, because you had to find something for yourself, or you were going to.
Yeah, I had to find something that was not about medical. You know, taking care of somebody medically fragile and death and dying. I wanted to reach for something outside that and say, I have no idea how to live with this situation, live with him the way he is, but I'm going to pick something that might help. So I went to an interfaith seminary.
So, I want to talk a little bit about the book because I think it's it's got some wonderful stories in it. I liked it because you kind of interviewed as an interfaith minister, would you say?
Yeah.
And you talked to these people, and you talked to Ellen, who said that she was a grief junkie. I thought that after 2 years, and I thought, aren't we all after only 2 years, Ellen?
Yeah, I love that term.
I like that term too, grief junkie. But she did something which I thought was great. She runs for the cure for breast cancer on Mother's Day because that's a hard day for her. And
right.
I thought, that's kind of a neat thing to do. And then Brenda is in there. Her husband was murdered. She's a Mormon, so I would think that she'd probably be comforted with life after death, and Marion, who is Arabic, and Jean, who's a Buddhist, talked about letting go, and then you even have Laura, who's a Wicca,
right.
Which neo-paganism, which was interesting, and she talked about transition and to deepen and transform you. So I like the way, and Elizabeth, whose daughter died with strep, journals, and she's a Christian. I love the way you took these stories about different women, and I would suggest to people that they get this book. I think they'll find it very healing and fascinating and find their own stories there. And Judy's story is in the last, which is really, really an incredible story. Well, Judy, how would they get a hold of your book?
They can go to www.spirituallifewraps.com.
Okay, and pick it up from there. Can you get it on...
It's also on Amazon.com.
Okay, good. It's on Amazon, and we also have it on our website. Well, I wanted to talk about, in the book, there are 7 lessons learned, which I really thought were great. Heidi and I were looking over today and talking about how we like them. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go over a couple of them. We're not going to have time to really talk about every one, but I'm going to say what they are, and then we'll pick out a couple. Or do you want to say what they are, Judy? Can you say them quickly?
Yeah,
got them written down?
I can summarize them.
Okay.
They're kind of universal lessons learned, even though each person walked a very individual path. The first one is healing is a choice, sometimes the hardest one for someone to hear when they're bereaved. Second, healing is unique, like your fingerprint. Third, healing takes time, and it's hard work. Four, healing is messy.
I really like the healing is messy thing.
Yeah, it's very messy, as you know. Five, healing is holistic. 6 is healing requires community. And lastly, 7, healing is promoted by gratitude and service.
Yeah. These are wonderful 7 lessons. And when you get the book, you'll find that Judy's expanded on them. They're really quite amazing. Heidi, we were talking about that last one, where is promoted by gratitude and service.
Yeah, I love that. And you know, I just read something today by Ralph Waldo Emerson, and he says, it is one of the most beautiful compensations of life that no man can sincerely try to help another without helping himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is so true. Yeah, I mean, being of service to help others in any way, even if you're just sharing your story.
You know, we always say to people that the first person you need to be of service to is yourself, wouldn't you say, Judy, on that very first days?
Yeah, you used to have a saying we got in seminary that you cannot serve from an empty well. And that,
like that
rang true for me. I had to fill my well as best I could each morning in centering, in a centering prayer or practice. And then from that well, I could share my surplus.
I like that. I like the idea of kind of that centering in the morning when you're ready to do it. I mean, early on, I don't think I could have centered on anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Scott died suddenly, so, you know, the shock of that whole thing is difficult. But I always think, you know, I say to people when they're going to go to Compassionate Friends or whatever, and that fits into community, maybe we could talk about that a little bit, is that if you can just take a cookie, when you feel well enough to take a cookie for people, that's a beginning.
Right, right. And even just being attentive to their story is a way of serving them.
Oh, I like that, too. What about community? Oh, go ahead, Heidi.
I was just going to say, even just going up and giving someone a hug at a meeting, sometimes we don't have to say anything because we've been there, and just reaching out physically is enough.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, and church communities, I don't know, what other kind of communities, Judy?
Well, I always encourage people to, because I get calls either from newly bereaved parents or their best friends. And the best friend calls are really interesting because they're really desperate. They say, we don't know what to do to help her or him. She doesn't seem to be doing very well. We just don't know what to say anymore or what to do. And so I say, let's go inside their natural support system. Because one of the hardest things about going to grief groups or into therapy is to walk into a room full of strangers with the most shattered heart you've ever felt and expose yourself. So I always say, let's start with the natural support. Who in among their family, their friends, their church circles, where do they hang out, particularly in small groups, if there are 2, 3, 4 groups?
That's a wonderful idea. For you out there who are bereaved, make sure that you also look to your natural support groups. However, sometimes you have to find new, safe people. Well, Judy, it's time to close our show, and I want to thank you so much for being on. And do you have one last quick comment you'd like to make for our audience?
Yes, I want to encourage your audience, if they're newly bereaved, to carry on, because we promise that if you carry on with the memory and honoring of your loved one, but moving forward in your own life, we promise there will be a better day for you.
Oh, thank you so much, Judy Wolf.
Thanks, Judy.
You're welcome. Thank you.
It's time for our break, and we want to thank Judy Wolf for being on our show. Please stay tuned again for our next segment, when our topic will be living with the death of a child, and our guests will be Suzanne Redfern and Susan Gilbert. These shows are archived on our website, the Compassionate Friends website. They can be downloaded on iTunes. Please stay tuned for more.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Just a reminder to our listeners that you can own 10 of the very best Healing the Grieving Heart shows, available on CD. Our listeners tell us that they have used these shows to examine the many viewpoints of grief and to stimulate conversation on this difficult subject. Call toll-free 877-969-0010, that's 877-969-0010, to order a set, or visit the CompassionateFriends.org website and click on TCF Originals for the opportunity to purchase this specially priced set at only $60 for 10 CDs plus shipping and handling. Heidi and I have donated all the proceeds to the Compassionate Friends to help bereaved families following the death of a child.
Who are we? What really matters? Is it possible to find true happiness after a great loss? The answers to some of life's most important questions are explored in Space Between Breaths, a powerful, uplifting film which looks at the potential in grief and to the ways it can become a motivational, transformational force in our lives. Featuring conversations with parents who have lost a child, including those whose loved ones died at Columbine on September 11th, and a mother whose son was one of the first U.S. soldiers to die in Iraq. Space Between Breaths offers an inspired and healing perspective on loss, which will transform the way you live and love. For information on ordering the film, visit the website www.spacebetweenbreaths.com.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. Our second topic today is living with the death of a child, and our guests are Suzanne Redfern and Susan Gilbert. Suzanne Redfern's daughter, Mimi, died of lung cancer in 1999, and Susan Gilbert's daughter, Amanda, was killed in a van rollover in 1983. Their mutual losses brought them together and inspired them to write The Grieving Garden, Living with the Death of a Child. Welcome to the show, Suzanne and Susan.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
It's great to have you both on the show today. And I have to tell you, I read a lot of books and I get a lot of books, and we've been doing the show for 3 years. And I really, this is a little different take. I really like it. I've thoroughly enjoyed looking through it and the stories. And I just want to give our audience a little take on it, because it's interesting that you have taken topics rather than people having people write anthology chapters. You've taken different topics and have asked people questions on these topics. Mm. So we're going to be talking a little bit more about this book, but first of all, could you share a little bit about your children's loss with us? It's also interesting that you, in this book, you two log in on some of these topics, and that it's a little different take, because one of you, your daughter, died of lung cancer, and the other was killed in a rollover automobile accident. So we've got sudden death versus terminal illness, a little longer-term illness. So particularly in the very beginning of your book, where you talk about the suddenness when it actually just happened, I found it a little bit different about your response to it. So I'll talk about that in a minute. And ask you questions about it. But could you tell us a little bit about your daughters again? Who wants to start with that?
I will, if you don't mind.
Okay, can you tell
Suzanne.
Who you are?
This is Suzanne, and it is my daughter, Mimi, who died of lung cancer in 1999, beg your pardon. She was 32. And, of course, it was a 7-8-month process, her illness. And during that time, anyone who loses someone of a degenerative disease, a progressive disease, grieves all during the process of their illness, particularly when it's clear that it will end in death. And so I think what you're referring to is the fact that much of my shock and grief had occurred during the diagnosis and the everyday degeneration of my daughter's illness.
And talk about ducking at the supermarket, because weren't you the one that talked about ducking?
Yes, and surprisingly, we found a number of other people who talk about the supermarket being a place of great terror, because it is where we come across people who either don't know about the death or are so awkward in approaching us that we're just afraid of having to confront our great vulnerability at that time, emotional vulnerability, and it puts us face-to-face with people we didn't expect to see. And so, yes, I still have visions of crouching behind...
Well, with you too, I think one of the things that we're going to talk with Suzanne a little bit too is that people didn't know how she was. I'm sure for that, 6 months' time or whatever, people were asking you, how's she doing?
Exactly. And we were away from home. I was with her in her home in Sacramento. And so the people I knew best where I lived weren't always up to snuff, and certainly from our hometown were not as well. So there was a lot of surprise and unknowing. We just really locked ourselves away, except for a very small coterie of friends and supporters during the illness. That seemed to be the choice that she made and we were comfortable with. So for some months, I did at least, in the awkwardness and fear of having to tell someone that Mimi had died. And to some regard, I'm not sure that I had fully grasped it either. So it was putting myself into that reality that I was dreading, as well as putting them into it.
Mm-hmm. And Suzanne, you want to tell us a little bit about your daughter's death?
Yes, this is Sue. Amanda was a Lincoln Douglas debater, and what was said about her was she had mastered the fine art of disagreeing without being disagreeable. So she had been debating on the UCLA debate team, and the team had gone to Las Vegas. And coming back, Amanda was a passenger in a van that rolled over. A tire blew out, and control was lost of the car, and two kids died in the accident, and a third was severely injured. It was, she was the light of my life, of course. I think most parents feel that way, and it was absolutely unimaginable. A policeman came to the door, and I think I spent a good 20 minutes trying to convince him why he was wrong, why this absolutely, it just couldn't be. And then ultimately, of course, the horror sinks in, and you begin to understand that it is, in fact, true.
And you also said within, you know, Scott was killed in an accident also and died at the site. And one of the things that you said, which I resonated with, is you can read about it in the newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It so happened the accident got a lot of coverage, even national coverage, and people were very touched by it, and it was on front page of papers, and I had to keep reading those newspapers to understand, and I think it was for at least a month, because it was this shock, feeling of shock kept coming into my brain. No, this can't be.
Yeah, Suzanne's daughter Mimi, the people were wondering, you know, how's she doing? And then with Amanda, it's like, wow, you know. So the losses are strange at the very beginning, a little different. So you both lost your only girls, right?
That's right.
Yes. Yeah, and for you, Sue, you lost your only child, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah, which were a whole other lot of issues, and we lost our only son. So anyway, my heart goes out to you about those stories. And getting on to the book, tell us why you called it The Grieving Garden.
Well, initially, during the first year of my grieving, I plugged
and
into...
And this is Susan Redfern. Right?
I'm sorry, I will tell you next time. I'm Suzanne. During the first year of my grieving, I was lucky enough to come across a wonderful local grief support foundation called CARA, and incidentally...
And by the way, you are very loved by them. I have received a book from CARA, a book from somebody else, and a book from so, you've got a lot of support people out there.
That's lovely. Yes, they've been wonderful to us, and we, Susan and I, are contributing all of our royalties from the book to CARA. We believe in it so strongly. And within CARA, you have several options, one of them being a personal volunteer peer grief counselor. So a woman who is now a dear friend came to my house for a year every week without any compensation. She had herself had lost her son. She is Catherine Lodato, one of our contributors to the book. And purely out of the desire to help another grieving parent, she gave of herself and dipped down deeply into her own experience. And we met whenever the weather permitted here in my small garden. And that garden came to be for me a grieving garden, which was a place of wonderful support and sadness, certainly, and tears, but laughter and mutual understanding. And that's what I had hoped, and Susan as well, she can speak for herself, but hoped that this book would offer to other grieving parents was a safe place to be among people who understand what they're suffering, where they might find succor and encouragement.
Well, I think one of the interesting parts of the book for me is that, as I say, what you say in the foreword of it, that one of the things that people will be able to go back and forth to the book, because you take up issues that, and we'll get on to them, but going into some of these different issues, like if I had a question, and the question which many, many people have, which is, what do I say early on, particularly when people ask me how many kids I have, or it could be for Heidi, for a sibling, how many siblings do you have? So how did people answer that? Just what were some of your thoughts?
Well, this is Sue.
Everybody
talks about their dread of having that happen, and of course it's different for everybody. I know for myself, I would literally start, you know, internally quaking when the subject turned, you know, in any social interaction to something personal, because I knew the question was coming. And, at first it's very awkward and you don't know what to say. And I would say, myself, my daughter just died, and then watch the other person blanch and turn away. Other people talk about how their answer changes over time. Some even denied the existence of having a child, and because they didn't want to make somebody uncomfortable, because they didn't want to have to talk about it. But over time, they matured in their ability to answer the question.
Now, I noticed that you interviewed 16 women, 6 men, and, that's the right number, 22, mm-hmm. right?
Counting ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting because that's kind of the ratio that I see when I go to groups, compassionate friends groups or whatever. It's about, 16 women and 6 men. So, you know, there are a lot more women involved. Did you find the men's answers different on issues?
I found them, both of us, I think, found them to be no less forthcoming, which was surprising to me. They didn't seem to have more trouble expressing emotional issues and getting in touch with their own fears. And it may just speak to those particular men who said yes, that they were especially able to go to those frightening places and really confront their weaknesses and their fears. So I think women who responded about their husbands in our group probably pointed out more differences, that the men often needed to be alone more, the women needed to be surrounded by company as a rule, that silence was useful to men, and
the silence was it. That's very interesting. Yeah, I liked one of the men in your book. Let me see if I can see what his name is. John Pua. Is that how you say it?
Yes, John Pua.
John Pua said, I got a chuckle when I read this. My advice to men is try to go to support group for the sake of your wife.
Yes.
Keep communication open. That was really. I got quite a chuckle out of that.
I think the men. This is Sue. I think the what the men seemed grateful to be asked to participate in the book. They wanted very much to tell their stories and also to talk about their children.
Mm-hmm. Well, I picked out some of some of the things that I thought were interesting in here. And I know this is a really tough one for people. What about marking anniversaries? What do you guys think? What do you do to mark anniversaries, and what do you think about that?
Well, this is Sue. What I do is I have found, even though it's been 15 years, I still have to keep that time. Both my daughter's birthday and the day she died are in the month of March. As one of our contributors calls it, it's a season of grief. And I find I have to be pretty careful not to have my calendar overloaded. I have to have a lot of time and space, even with this much passage of time. I tend to plant flowers in the winter so that I can pick them. I can pick daffodils and tulips in the month of March, and I just imagine that my daughter is pleased with that, and I bring them to the cemetery. I'm very touched that friends still remember the anniversary and often will call or be in touch in some way. So
then maybe it's our audience out there who are not happy with friends who don't remember.
This is Suzanne, and my daughter Mimi's birthday was last week. And everything does change with time, and people do let go. And it was hard for me to realize that the people who had remembered her birthday in previous years didn't this year.
And how many years has it been?
It has been, it was 1999, so it'll be 9 years in December.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is one of the changing aspects. It's an organic experience, this grieving. In the beginning, I think we are very fearful that the memory of our child will be lost, and we lock in some of these rituals that we try and determine that we will do every year. I started going to our mountain cabin with my sons and having a little shrine for Mimi and so on. And over time, it often happens that these rituals just don't seem to work any longer. They feel artificial and a little stiff.
Mm-hmm. And so, maybe some people don't want to participate in it anymore, too, that, you know,
yes.
wanted to originally. Well, you know, I just received an email from a colleague of mine who said, my daughter died a year ago today. And I thought it was great that she put it out there. And I said,
yeah,
happy, and I sent her an email saying, happy birthday, Nina. And, you know, and I hope things are going all right for you, Kathy. You know, and thanks for telling me that it's her birthday because, you know, we do have to educate people, too, on how we do want to be treated. They don't know that we want, you know, what we want. And so feel free, audience out there, to let people know.
Yeah, we need to teach people, I agree with you, Mom, to be good grief support. And sometimes we need to give them reminders. I agree with you on that.
I think that's a wonderful point from both of you. And thank you for stressing that. I think we do too little of it. We might not have stressed that enough in the book as well. That it is, to some degree, our responsibility to help people bridge this difficult gap they feel in our culture.
Well, you know, we've got to come to break right now. We can pick this up when we get back. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. Our topic today is living with the death of a child, and our guests are Suzanne Redfern and Sue Gilbert. Please stay tuned for more.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Who are we? What really matters? Is it possible to find true happiness after a great loss? The answers to some of life's most important questions are explored in Space Between Breaths, a powerful, uplifting film which looks at the potential in grief and to the ways it can become a motivational, transformational force in our lives. Featuring conversations with parents who have lost a child, including those whose loved ones died at Columbine on September 11th, and a mother whose son was one of the first U.S. soldiers to die in Iraq. Space Between Breaths offers an inspired and healing perspective on loss, which will transform the way you live and love. For information on ordering the film, visit the website www.spacebetweenbreaths.com.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Dr. Gloria Horsley. Just a reminder to our listeners that you can own 10 of the very best Healing the Grieving Heart shows, available on CD. Our listeners tell us that they have used these shows to examine the many viewpoints of grief and to stimulate conversation on this difficult subject. Call toll-free 877-969-0010, that's 877-969-0010, to order a set or visit the CompassionateFriends.org website and click on TCF Originals for the opportunity to purchase this specially priced set at only $60 for 10 CDs plus shipping and handling. Heidi and I have donated all the proceeds to the Compassionate Friends to help bereaved families following the death of a child.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, we are talking about living with the death of a child with Suzanne Redfern and Sue Gilbert, authors of The Grieving Garden, Living with the Death of a Child. Welcome back to the show, Suzanne, Sue, and Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi.
Thanks.
Well, I wanted to just talk about the book a little bit in our last segment. It's called The Grieving Garden, Living with the Death of a Child. 22 parents share their stories. They've got some really heavy hitters here giving testimonials to it. Isabel Allende, who she lost her daughter, right?
Yes.
Danielle Steele, I know she lost her son and wrote a wonderful book, His Bright Light, about that.
Yes.
Eleanor Coppola, she's a bereaved mother also. Lots of people that we know out there in the literary world who have had lost children also.
Mm.
And all the proceeds are going to CARA, which is an organization in Palo Alto, California, that does wonderful work with bereaved people. And how would people get your book? It's on our website. You can get it from Amazon.
Yes, it's available at Amazon, many Borders, Barnes & Noble, and other online sites as well.
And it's really a go-to book, and they talk about it as a community of understanding. And the book really is that. They take different topics, and they've interviewed 22 parents, including themselves, so you get a little of flavor of them, and it's really a very interesting and wonderful book. Well, I wanted to go to some of the topics, again, that you took up in the book. And when we get ready to close the show, there's a wonderful poem that's written by Sue Gilbert's daughter, Amanda, which you found a year later, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, and she's going to close the show by, what is the name of that poem?
Man Will Prevail.
And we're going to go out of the show with her reading that. But before we go out of the show, I wanted to hit a couple of more of the questions. I mean, we could go on for days with these questions. They're so interesting. But the one I loved, Heidi, and I loved the very last question that you asked them. If you were to have a chance to share one true thing about life or death or grief with a bereaved parent, what would it be? What a question. Who came up with that?
Suzanne did. When she first conceived of the book, that was one of the questions that Suzanne formulated. This is Sue, and I thought it was a brilliant question. Which we tried with all of the questions not to front load them to kind of set the answers, but to really make them open-ended. So that, for instance, in the chapter on faith, we don't presume that people have a faith, but gave them an opportunity to respond to whatever their spiritual leanings were, if they wished, and how they changed through the process. And similarly, on this setting out, we didn't suggest certain ways in which they might or not want to reach out to someone else. And they responded, I think, beautifully.
They did. I wanted to just state a couple of responses. In the book, you say, we remind you, no matter how isolated you may feel at times, you are not alone. And that's certainly, this book does bring you in to let you know that. But I wanted to, Susan Benavisti, is that how she says her name?
Yes, mm-hmm. Susan Benavisti.
I got a little quote from her that I like. She said, I have to share some of our experiences to illustrate that there is no right way or wrong way to endure the first. Each of you will find your own way. I hope with passing time you will be able to celebrate the joy your child brought to your family as we do, Shelley. Which I think is great. There's so much hope in this last question that you ask people. And another person I wanted to read was Nancy Imrow, where she says, eventually my emotions healed. My life along with sorrow that he is gone. There is joy and laughter and happiness in my life. There is light.
Yes, and Nancy was one who requested. She was interviewed less than 2 years after Sean died. And then 3 years later, because it took us a while to do this book, she said, well, could I add something? My life has changed in those years since I wrote, and I don't want to leave it on this sad note, this very, very dark note in which she wrote about her guilt dreams and so on. So it was at her own instigation that she added this up, much more hopeful coda.
And I wanted to kind of end looking at these quotes with Keith Gilbert, Suzanne's husband, because he says, it's a real test of your courage. Try to think of it as your child's leaving you with an opportunity to grow, and that's what life is about.
Yes, yes.
A wonderful comment that he made.
Is it not?
Well, Susan, on that note, would you please read for us Amanda's poem?
Yes, this is an excerpt from a poem Amanda wrote just a year, almost exactly a year before she died, called Man Will Prevail. And she says, close your eyes and endure the terror. Realize it all will pass. Hold on to your hidden dreams and see the future in the glass.
close your eyes to the darkness. The patience is within your soul. Its presence you can mark, for on the inside you are whole.
Beautiful. Incredible. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been wonderful to have you on the show, Suzanne Redfern and Susan Gilbert. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you, Gloria.
Thank you.
Both of you.
It's time to close our show now, and I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. Please stay tuned again next week when we'll hear about stories that heal after loss with Diane Rooks. This show's archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org website. Please stay tuned again next Thursday, 9 Pacific Standard, 12 Eastern. Remember that others have been there before you and made it. You can too. You need not walk alone. This show is brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley. Judy, Suzanne, and Susan, thank you for creating a safe space for people to tell their stories.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
It was our pleasure.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. Tune in again next week, and thanks for listening.